Android and iPhone users, welcome. BlackBerry and Windows Phone users, these phones don't even support podcasting, bro. The podcast going beyond the headlines. This is the Gooply Cast. Here's your host, Matthew Carter.
And welcome back to the Gooply Cast. We're live right now on Twitter, Twitch, Facebook, and YouTube. Thank you very much for joining us. If you can't make our live show, we have an audio-only version. You can find that on all of your favorite Android and iOS podcasting apps. With us tonight is iPhone Jedi, Matt Evans. Hey, Matt.
I'm here. Hello, everybody.
Awesome. How are you doing?
Good.
Awesome. Also joining us is iMac connoisseur, Roy Slipinski. Hey, Roy.
Is this something we're doing?
What?
Holding Matt, up our iPhones, yeah.
Matt did the same thing, so I figured this is something we're doing now.
Yeah. That's not a thing, that's just awkward...
it's a thing now. It's a thing.
An awkward tick you guys have where you carry iPhones around. We also have host of Cooking with Tim, Tim Van Claveren. Hey, Tim.
Hello.
Oh, way to just spoil our little, pattern there.
I'm glad you stuck with it. Good job, Tim.
Thanks.
It's that kind of innovative thinking that'll get you Cooking with Tim viewers.
I was going to stick my arm up now that I have
my second. I saw you doing that during the intro. I'm very proud of you.
Got to stretch it.
Yeah, I saw that too. Keep doing it. Row.
Did that happen when you were chefing it out on Cooking with Tim? Is that spatula arm?
Chefing injury.
Yeah.
Yes. That's
good. And directing the live stream tonight is Joe Meacham. Both a big thanks to Joe, and hey, Joe.
What's up, gamers?
Hey, Joe.
How's everyone doing?
What's up? Doing good. How are you doing?
Just chilling, hanging out.
Good. Thank you for helping us out.
Of course.
Glad. Tonight we'll be discussing Epic Games versus Apple. They're wrapping up their trial, and we'll go over the last couple weeks and the not super surprising, but very controversial, last little bits of testimony from CEO Tim Cook, as well as,
I just gonna what? Say I was shocked at the questioning on Friday between the judge and Tim Cook and the property, the software that they use and stuff like that, what is it they called it?
APIs.
Proprietary software or whatever, something like that. But anyways, I was really shocked at that, and if you haven't read the articles from the judge's thing, I'll see if I can find the article. But I thought that was a rough day for Tim Cook.
It was quite direct. The judge, she hadn't really gotten into the trial as much, but when you have the CEO of one of the most profitable public company that exists right now. Maybe Amazon is technically more profitable now or higher valued, but still, you have the CEO of Tim Cook or CEO of Apple on the stand, Tim Cook. You're going to grill him if you can.
Yeah, and here I'll share the link to the article from The Verge in the chat so everybody can read it. But there was a really big exchange between the judge and Tim Cook, and it was all about the business model and, developers and whether developers, are happy and stuff like that, and, taking 30% of it, and just pushing Tim Cook on this. And you have to read the whole exchange. We'd spend the whole day here going through it, but, at the end, she said, have you seen evidence that developers are unhappy? And I think he said, no, I don't see that. And she questioned him about that, and she said that's something that Phil Schiller would see, because Phil Schiller runs the App Store and oversees it. So
one of the things that you one of the things that you just pointed out was the satisfaction with developers piece. And she did ask Tim Cook basically how she was kind of framing the question as if, okay, Apple does so much for the developers, but she brought out an article that she had read where she heard that 39% of developers were dissatisfied in some way with Apple's engagement with developers. So she was like, well, it doesn't look like Apple has a lot of incentive to solve these issues for developers, solve this dissatisfaction, because 39% isn't a small number. And when you're in an antitrust case, it's like, well, you have complete control of your operating system and you're claiming that you do so much for developers, but it doesn't sound like you have a lot of knowledge, Tim Cook, on the dissatisfaction that you have in your developer ecosystem and a way that you can communicate. He didn't really communicate to the judge specifically what they do to engage with dissatisfied developers. He just kind of like blowed past the question. I think he said that they have a lot of things that make developers feel comfortable there, but I don't remember specifically how he answered that question. I'll have to look.
Yeah, and she pushed him on like the 30%, you know, and how they've gone down to, you know, 15%. And, you know, she basically came out and said that wasn't because of competition. That was basically because you didn't want to open up an antitrust lawsuit investigation, you know, and that's the point that she's trying to do, except for the fact that the same thing, like when Apple did it, Google did it. Google dropped it to 15% for the same people in the small business program. So I feel like there's competition because, you know, there are two phone manufacturers out there. There's Apple and there's Google, like for software, at least. You know, there's Android has a lot of different softwares, but there's two giant play stores. There's the Play Store and there's the App Store. And, you know, they go competition with each other, you know, and so that is competition. And I disagree with her, the fact that, you know, she doesn't obviously, I don't think she thinks that the Google Play Store is competition, but it is.
Would you guys say that the move that Apple made to reduce the 30% fee to 15% for developers who make, what was it, less than $1 million?
Yeah.
Do you think that Apple did that for without thinking about the litigation that they were going to go under? Do you think they did that, they were going to do that the whole time, that it was completely planned, that the Epic case had nothing to do with it?
I think the Epic case was the catalyst. It may have been something they toyed around with, but I'm almost positive that the Epic lawsuit was either the catalyst or it hurried along this idea they already had. You know, they rolled it out pretty quickly, which makes me think that they at least tossed the idea around.
I think one of the people who was testifying did say that they had planned this reduction in fee since like 2016 or something like that. And I think it might have been Phil Schiller or the guy who opened the MacBook in like a really special, secretive way. He might have
Craig Faraday.
It might have been him who talked about it, and he was like, "Yeah, the Epic Apple trial might have accelerated things, but they did also have it in the back of their mind."
I think COVID might have sped up the process for that because, you know, a lot of developers are really rough right now. People are not spending a lot of money and stuff like that. So some of these smaller end developers, I think I shared this too, but Snapchat also came out and said that Snapchat says it's happy to pay Apple's 30% and wouldn't exist without it.
Snapchat.
I'm just saying.
Well, Snapchat is a mobile-only platform.
It is.
You know, I got to say,
is.
Though,
it absolutely
in response to what you said about you know, Apple directly competing basically with the Google Play Store, I think that there's a completely other way that we can look at it. Let's see, where's my notes? The judge had said that to Epic, because Epic was trying to argue that, you know, once consumers buy an iPhone, they're basically locked into, you know, the iPhone market, and that Apple no longer competes for their business. I'm going to agree with that, and mainly because the judge follows up and basically says that their formulation, this is a quote, "Your formulation seems to ignore the reality that customers choose an ecosystem. It's Apple's business strategy to create a particular kind of ecosystem that is incredibly attractive to its purchasers and its consumers." And then she basically goes on to say that if the court were to change that ecosystem by allowing more competition, that it would, quote, "destroy the ecosystem in which they have made a choice to enter." So what I'm saying is, I don't think the App Store needs to compete with the Google Play Store. What you're really looking at is Apple's phone competing with Android's phone. And when the person who buys into whichever operating system they buy into, whichever phone they buy into, they no longer need to be competed. The app stores are no longer needing to compete for their business. It was the phone. It was the OS that competed for their business. And that Apple doesn't have to be competitive with the App Store versus Google, because they've already won their customer over. The App Store was just a byproduct of them purchasing an iPhone. But what I'm saying is the fact of
here's the
App Store doesn't need to be competitive with the Google Play Store, because it was the phone that was competitive. And the
that's
phone
what
that
the customer
the
purchased
over.
Initially. That was the holistic product that Apple is trying to sell to people. It's like, this is the whole package. You get this closed ecosystem, and people seem to be choosing that, and it seems to be really popular.
Correct.
Versus the,
people chose the ecosystem. It doesn't matter whether the App Store is competitive with the Google Play Store. I'm saying this in defense of Apple. I think Epic's 100% correct when they say that Apple no longer needs to compete for their customers' business. They've already won their customers' business. Why do they need to be competitive? That's like saying you bought yourself a Dyson vacuum. I need to continue to compete for your business. No, you already have my product. Why do I need to compete for your business?
Yeah, and if you have that Dyson vacuum, you can sell like accessories to it that are specific for that vacuum. You don't have to support third-party accessories for that vacuum if you don't want to. You can say, if you go in and put in like a new motor to my Dyson vacuum, well, now I'm not going to warranty that anymore. Because I think you can also jailbreak iPhones and put on third-party apps and stuff, and Apple can say, well, you change the way that our product works in a way that we have specified we're not going to support anymore. You're free to do that since it's your device, but we will no longer support you and your efforts with that device. So they just wash their hands of it and they go away.
Well, so yeah. I look at it in a couple different ways. I see Roy's explanation on it, but I think of it competition-wise, because I feel like there still is competition with the App Store. There are certain apps that are only available on the iPhone. They're only available on the App Store. And one of the things that keeps me all, like, hands down, won't go to Android is Fantastical. Like, I have never found a replacement calendar app to something that's equivalent to Fantastical on the Android ecosystem and the Android Play Store. Like, and they are not gonna shift away from that. You know, 1Password for a long time was available only on the iPhone, branched off, now they're available on Windows, every platform, because they have to be there. But there's certain apps and there's certain productivity apps that are only available on the iPhone, and that will probably never come to the Android ecosystem. So, you know, when you sell that to developers and you sell that to the App Store platform, I mean, you're keeping business by, you know, keeping those developers there. You know, I think it again comes, but the overall thing is, I think it comes down to is the developers. The developers make the App Store. Apple makes lots of software and tools for developers. The developer portal is massive. You know, there are massive amounts of APIs.
More they said they have like 150,000 or something like that APIs.
Yeah, there
that
are
they
massive APIs, and that they maintain and support. And if we've seen anything, APIs are strong and hard to make. You know, Twitter's been making a new API for
third-party developers of, you know, Twitter applications, you know, something that they've kind of, you know, neglected over the years. And we've seen it. It takes a while for that. Notion, which is another popular app, you know, has been working on a API for months. I mean, almost a year, I think. And they finally just released their APIs. APIs take a lot of people to update. You know, Apple goes into every basically application that's submitted to the App Store and reviews it for spamware, malware, and you know, stuff that's going to, you know, deflate your battery, make it not working, you know, stuff that could destroy your phone, to make sure that that's safe to use on the iPhone. And they have, I think they said, some of 500 people who review apps, you know. And just from my experience in submitting apps to the App Store, I've only waited about 2 days to get an app thing approved. I know some developers have said it's taken up to 7 days, and I think that could be in some cases when they have a, you know, big launch and stuff like that, you know, trying to. But my experience has been 2 days, you know, for the last few years. So I think that Apple has really improved their relationships in trying to get the app stores pushed out. But this is all software that we will essentially pay for. If let's just theorize that the judge sides with Epic, okay? Appeals go on and on and on. Okay, so Apple loses.
Yep.
Let's say that. We used to pay for software updates for the Mac. Like, Mac software, if you wanted to upgrade every year, you had to pay for that, just like you did for Windows. Like, I don't know, do you guys still pay for Windows updates?
No, they're like all free now.
Yeah, like we've basically seen a Windows lot 10 of. Is free. Yeah, so if you have Windows 10, you just keep upgrading with it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same thing that we do with Mac OS. We don't pay for that. We don't pay for that, you know, software update. And so what I think overall is, you know, if Apple loses and we go back to this system, we're going to start paying for software updates. Very well could happen. Not going to say it's a, you know, for sure thing, but we could go back to paying for software updates. We may only get security upgrades for iOS. You know, we could just get security updates. And if we want to upgrade to, for example, iOS 15 comes out this year, if we wanted to upgrade to the newest and latest features that are in iOS 15, we would have to pay for that update. Or buy a new phone altogether and get the software. But I feel like that's a very strong possibility. And then the developer tools that we use for developers, they could again start charging for that. We could end up paying a lot more money to develop apps. If you want to you know, use certain APIs, you could have to pay like a threshold for different APIs. I feel like this could be really bad for developers, because Apple really does spend a lot of money, I think, on developers, and I think Google does the same thing. They don't go as far as, you know, Apple does, but...
With Apple, they spent, it was like, the number sounds insane in my head, but I want to say they spent like $20 billion. I think they...
$50 million.
$50 million. I think in 2020 they spent like $2 billion on supporting developers or something like that. So not an insignificant amount of money.
But like it was for the developer conference that's held every year. Not this year and last year, because this is all a virtual event right now. But you know, Apple invites developers to come to the conference. You do have to pay for it. You know, it's I think it's a couple thousand dollars, but so you do have to pay to go.
Oh, sorry, they spent $18.75 billion on research and development in 2020. So that's the number that I had.
Got it.
Which is money that they've earned from, you know, high profits on phones to the amount of money that they get from the App Store, which they make a good App Store, so they make a lot of money.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing too, and I don't think Google has this, because when you log into the App Store, you have developers, you have people who write content featuring your apps, you know. They have awards that they give out for best design apps and stuff like that. And they feature those on the front of the App Store. So when you log in, you know, and if you develop a great app, then you could get featured on that. Like, developers could write out and start writing an article, a blog article, and feature your apps. You know, best one of them that comes to mind is, you know, like there's third party third-party mail apps, mail clients for your iPhone and for your Mac. And they have a bunch of articles on there shelling out all these mail apps, and they're not featuring their own mail app. I mean, they haven't really done much with it in a few years, but like they're featuring these other developers who have, you know, spent a lot of time in developing apps, you know, and put a lot of money into and time into their designs. So,
I think anybody questions how much Apple does for, well, so I think people do question how much of the money that Apple gets from the App Store goes back into the App Store, and how much Apple spends on supporting the App Store really goes to what people might actually want. Because I think what Epic is trying to do is say, we can have a store that sells things, a digital store that sells digital goods, and we'll take 12% from it. That's the number that we think is reasonable, so Apple should be doing that too. But also, Epic is trying to say, well, we shouldn't have to use the Apple payment processing system, which winds up charging us 30%. We should just be able to use some random third-party payment system that isn't as secure as Apple's payment system, that doesn't charge a service fee for running the App Store. They might only charge like the Visa processing fee, which is like 3, maybe 5%. But even Epic asking for two different things there. They want to pay basically no fees. They only want to pay the fees for processing the credit card, and they don't want to pay the additional support fees that Apple charges. But then again, on their store, on the Epic Games Store, they're also charging a service fee. They also do some of the things that you're talking about that the App Store does, where they help developers and they support them. They feature content on their store. So Apple's like basic ask, which is, we want to pay less because we think you don't do anything, Apple, is like routed by the fact that they're also charging a random amount for a service that they think is fair, which is 12%. And well, Apple...
Go ahead, finish.
I was just going to say, and Apple arguably provides a much more comprehensive service, having their own hardware and their own larger ecosystem where all of these things operate. So Epic only having a game store, it makes sense for them to charge a small fee of like 12%. Whereas Apple is running a super huge app store with a lot of competing interests, a lot of different types of applications, plus all of these applications can feed into multiple different types of hardware. They have Apple TV, the Apple Watch, the phones, the Mac, and they're always researching and investing in how to make all of these things more efficient, more secure, and just smoother for everyone, that it starts to look like them charging 30% is paying for a significant amount of benefit to developers, like what you're saying.
So one of the things that came to mind, and when we were talking about this and what you were mentioning about like third-party payment systems and stuff too. And this came up, I think, during, I'm not sure if it was during Phil's comment or Craig's comment in there, but one of them said, was asked, I think, by the judge, do you think there's too much spam on the Mac? And, you know, whoever's asked the question said yes. Like, and that's pretty much what it is. Like, there's a lot of spam. There's viruses that can infect your Mac. You know, a lot of people have said for a long time that the Mac doesn't get viruses, but it can. It can get viruses. It can get malware. You know, I've seen it happen before. And that's what you do when you open up for different Play Stores and different options, or, you know, sideloading apps, or, you know, installing apps without going through the App Store. And, you know, I'm not saying that they should go back and change that, but Apple has tried a lot to, you know, restrict only maps from the App Store to be installed. You now have to go into privacy settings into your Mac and actually allow to sell third-party or to install third-party apps, you know. And it's something you have to do like every time you install an app. It doesn't that doesn't have a security authentication from Apple that allows you to do it. So yeah, so definitely it's something that, you know, Apple should do and, you know, try to eliminate the spam. But I feel like if they do this to the App Store or the iPhone, you know, it's just going to get boggled down with garbage and everything else, you know.
At the end of the day, if Epic wins this and Apple has to allow third-party app stores or reduce their fees or something, anything that could cause Apple to lose revenue over this, let's be 120% clear on this. If capitalism has caught us anything, it's that Apple's not going to lose that money. They will find another way to get that money back, whether it be charging higher prices for other things, charging more money for developers to get their developer license. Apple finds some way to make that loss up. And in my opinion, any way that Apple could make that loss up is going to hurt the end user most of all.
And that was something that the judge was really asking about, kind of probing everyone that was on trial. She was just kind of trying to figure out if some kind of change, like what you're suggesting, if Epic wins and maybe there's a reduction in how much Apple charges, or perhaps someone can circumvent the App Store altogether, how is the consumer or customer or end user going to be affected by that kind of change? And it seems like she was really drilling Tim Cook and really just everyone else when she had the opportunity to, for answers on that very question. Like, what do you guys do? What are you offering? What are you claiming? How do you handle when something goes wrong? You guys are talking a lot about privacy. Tell me more about that. So it seems like she's really aware that if this down the line does affect Apple in a negative way, she's very aware of what the consequences could be, which is,
well,
it might cost the customer more, or they might lose out on privacy, or they might lose out on the what Apple is offering as a product that you were talking about, Matt, which is like this complete experience that Apple curates and sells as a product.
And that's what I'm saying is software updates, paid software updates could come back. Because at the end of the day, too, when you look at this, and I think one of the Apple lawyers said this in their closing arguments, and if you take Epic's definition, Apple is a monopolist. And so is Xbox. Everyone is a monopolist, developers across things. And that's what it
everybody
is.
Everybody that has an app store.
You look at this, everybody who has an app store. So if you look at this, Windows, Google, Xbox, PlayStation, here, where do we end? Like, this could honestly be, you know, a game changer across the board on how the judge rules. And
it would be detrimental.
It would be, and that's what I'm saying. The things that we've come to expect from Apple, from Windows, from Google, we could start seeing paid for across the board. And that's what I'm afraid for, because I don't want to go back to paid software updates. Like, you know, it used to be like $99, I think, at one point, and then it dropped down to like $59 or something like that, or $29, I don't know. But anyways, like, I mean, that's a cost you have to expense every year. And people don't want to spend
Google
money
and
on
Windows,
software updates.
So I don't really notice. Just gonna say.
But I'm and, just saying, you could have. You used to have to pay for software updates on Windows. I do know that,
yeah,
because when you were on,
yeah,
Windows,
sure,
98, you used to have to pay for an upgrade version, right?
Like Service Pack 2, not Service Pack 2, yeah, but you'd have to pay for like whatever, like Half-Life version or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you had Windows 8, you know, and you wanted Windows 10, you could buy an upgrade version for it. It was free for a while, I think, because they had so much issues. But the same thing with,
yeah,
Windows 95, you upgraded to Windows XP, upgraded from Windows XP to Windows 7 to Windows 8. Like, there was a cost at there, and now you guys don't have that cost anymore. So, like, that's honestly something that, I mean, we definitely could see if this comes back.
You know the reason why Microsoft was pushing Windows 10 to be free so much was because they were focused on Windows App Store numbers. They were like, hey, developer, come to the Windows App Store because we have this many users who are registered to own Windows 10. And that's when you get that amount of numbers, that's almost close to competing, not exactly, but close to competing with other app stores out there. So that's pretty much why they wanted to push that, is because they wanted developers to see, oh, hey, if I develop for this platform, it's gonna, that's a lot of people that can download my app. It's a direct competition to Apple.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, and then you think of Xbox too, like what could happen with Xbox, you know, and PlayStation, you know,
Epic is certainly thinking about that. There's at every chance they get, they're trying to, because one of the issues in this trial is that Epic is trying to say the market that Apple has a monopoly over, that they're using illegally, is in-app payment processing. The thing that triggered this whole trial was Epic wanting to reduce the cost of V-Bucks to $7.99 and circumvent Apple's in-app payment by routing customers to the Epic website or whatever to have them pay there and then sending them back into Fortnite. So they're specifically trying to be like, no, judge, video game consoles, those don't compete in the same market. The market is within an iPhone, within iOS, within the App Store, within the app that you may have already bought. It's the transaction that you're trying to make and how Apple processes that payment that we have an issue with. So they're very specifically trying to like not piss off consoles, because if the judge is like, well, no, you seem to really not like ecosystems that are closed, just like the Switch, just like the Xbox, just like the PlayStation, isn't that really the problem? Like, you can't get anything else, any other software onto this hardware? Isn't that what we're trying to fight here? Like, no, just payment processing, because if you blow open this walled garden, there's nothing stopping you from blowing up every walled garden everywhere, and then it's just chaos.
If we've know anything, you know, about legal cases, is once there's a ruling on a case, especially a federal case, it sets a precedent for every other case that comes after it. You can use it as precedent and use it to rule in your favor. So ruling in Epic's favor on this, yeah, sure, Epic may only be focused on Apple at this point, and they may not even go after anybody else. But somebody else might go after Microsoft and Xbox in the future. And then you'd be like, well, an Apple or
absolutely.
If this was ruled, you know, in Epic's favor because of XYZ. And that's the same exact instances going on here. I mean, it sets a, I don't want to say a dangerous precedent, but it could set a precedence that could be like a house of cards that just is going to cause this whole thing to tumble down. And nobody here, not Epic, not Apple, not the judge, nobody can really realize what consequences could come about from this.
I think that
go ahead. I was going to say, and I don't see any positive outcomes in the long run. I can see some short-term positives. Yeah, some short-term positives are Epic gains some extra money. But in the long run, this could hurt developers, like Matt said. You know, developers could have to pay more for their APIs for different tiers. The end users could pay for, I mean, I see more negative long-term effects than I see any positive long-term effects. Any positives that are only going to be gained in the short term.
Are you guys aware of the issue that like Microsoft and cloud gaming services are having with trying to get cloud gaming services on the App Store? How do you guys feel about Apple's unwillingness to allow cloud services onto their App Store when they allow things like Netflix and Roblox?
Well, and that's what I disagree with Apple on that part. I flat out disagree. The video games have a rating system. They should develop software. They should develop the parent controls into the App Store with APIs that these developers can use to set parent controls to what games can be played. The games get rated by, you know, a third party vendor, SRB. You know, and the vendor then rates what that is. So
requiring these cloud gaming services to have rated games based on the age that they are appropriate for should be built into that, and then they can be brought into it. I strongly agree that that is the way that Apple and Google should go with bringing cloud gaming into the app stores and stuff like that. I think that's a fair assessment to do because, you know, Netflix has parent controls. Most streaming services has parent controls. I feel like that's, you know, I think that's a fair argument to give. And I would be interested to hear what Apple would counter with that, you know, on why they wouldn't do that. Cause I think that would be good for developers.
It is literally no different than using Hulu or Netflix. It really isn't.
And they all have parental controls in it. So, like, why not allow developers to
and an already established rating
system. Parental controls in it? Yeah, exactly. Apple actually, you know, says that they're... I can't remember where I read this, but they tout that the iPhone is more safer and secure for kids. You know, use because you can't sideload apps on there. The Play Store or the Mac Store or the App Store is really regulated. You know, they check every app, you know, and stuff like that. They make sure that the, you know, if it's not appropriate for kids, that's, you know, in there and that, you know, people can't download those parental controls because they go through an app review process. That doesn't happen necessarily with Google. So, I mean, when you look at that, that's a strong case to make. Hey, this is a great place for cloud gaming. If you want to bring your kid to iPhone, and that could sell more iPhones by having, you know, popular parental controls built into the iOS system and allowed to use by game developers for cloud gaming.
Absolutely.
And this is all technology that they've built up since the initiation of the App Store, where they began charging 30% right when the App Store came out. In-app payments did not really occur. I was listening to someone in the trial talk about how there were some apps when the App Store kind of came out and started gaining popularity where developers were charging people inside of their app, but Apple didn't have an in-app payment processing like API and system. So Apple was actually suggesting at the time was like, hey, use a web browser to go or kick your users out of our app store, out of your app, kind of like separate our platform from what you're trying to do, have them make whatever purchase on a web browser and then go back into the app and do whatever you need to do. And then eventually they came out with in-app payment processing, their own API, their own system, and are now requiring developers to do that. So do you guys think that since Epic is kind of looking for a way to circumvent in-app payment processing, that it can be done on like a web browser, do you think that Apple could go back to that for developers who might want to? Do you think that they should allow developers to advertise, like go to Safari and do this if you really want to save money? How do you guys feel about that?
Well, because if you're trying to, you're essentially saying you can load an app through the Safari or Chrome or whatever, and that's what you can do with the Mac. But when you do that, like, you don't have the same privacy controls that you have in there. So, for example, if you do that, people could download third-party apps that are not approved in the App Store. So, for example, porn could create an app that you could download through Safari and, you know, essentially load onto your computer. And, you know, then where do the parental controls come into? You know, so I think that hurts the iPhone itself and the App Store itself. So I would be definitely, you know, if people want to develop apps, web apps, they can do so with the web, you know, and not have to load a third-party app. Yeah, you don't have the same controls that you do over it, but at the same time, you pay, like, when you launch an app in the App Store, you're using APIs that are developed for the iPhone, and those are software that you do. So you pay for that, you know, with a developer account,
What if it was just, like, buying What if it was just getting a Netflix subscription? What if you go into something like Netflix and Netflix is like, hey, we want you to use this button, buy this thing. Or if it was Fortnite, hey, we don't want you to use Apple's payment processing system. Here's a button, click that, kicks you out to Safari. You buy your V-Bucks, your skins or whatever. You hop back into the app, you have fun.
I don't think that they should have the ability to... Go ahead.
I was just going to say that I don't think that that's the right avenue to do, because A, the one thing about privacy and with the iPhone is that it's private, it's secure, and when you launch third party apps, you know, and tell them to go, you know, download this from this site. Okay, yeah, we all trust Hulu, we all trust, you know, Epic, you know, and some of those games. But when you open that up to other developers that can do that, they can take advantage of other customers and spam them, you know, and then take their money, essentially. If when you have it controlled in the App Store, when you request a refund, it goes to Apple. Apple makes the decision on behalf of the developers whether to give the money back or not, you know. And so you know, but they look at the developer reasons too. Like, if you don't have a good reason, and their reasons are outlined in probably, you know, articles of knowledge on what validates a refund, you know, and stuff like that. And I'm pretty sure it's shared with developers, you know. But if you accidentally download an app, there was an app on the App Store years ago, and it was an app that did absolutely nothing, and it was $1,000.
Oh, one of those.
It was $1,000 in-app purchase. And how many people downloaded that just to see what it did? 7 people downloaded that app, I think, and it absolutely did nothing. If they had done that through a website and didn't get their money back, then like what? Like, I mean,
that's true.
So
if they had done that in-app payment purchasing, they had done that to the website,
or they went out to a website and signed up for a license for it to do this, and then they come back into the store and that app does nothing that it says it does, there's no recourse for them to get a refund because they did it on this third party site.
Go ahead.
I was going to say that my whole viewpoint and philosophy on that is, like, say you're Netflix, whatever, enter a random app here. We're going to use Netflix in my example. You go to Netflix and you need a subscription for Netflix. You can choose to buy your Netflix subscription through the in-app purchase, or Netflix gives you the option of opening up a browser, going to netflix.com, and you have to go to the browser yourself. It's not going to route you through the browser. You have to go through the browser yourself, go to netflix.com, and purchase a subscription there. And Netflix can make it more worth your while, and the subscription's $2 cheaper or whatever. I don't care. There needs to be a disclaimer pop-up that says somewhere that, you know, by going through the developer's website for this purchase, your subscription, your purchase is not secure through Apple's payment process, yada yada yada, you know, legal jargon there, for what Matt said, you know, to protect the purchaser from possibly some malicious intent. But it also gives the developer a chance to not have to use the in-app purchase system, and then it's up to the consumer whether or not they want to take the inconvenient route to go to the browser to save whatever money they may or may not save, or use the convenient, secure transaction that Apple's built into the API. And I think that's the sweet spot, personally.
Yeah, and another thing that I was thinking about is, let's say you don't have to use Apple's payment system anymore for in-app purchases. And apps can decide, you can decide what payment system your users use. Now let's say you're using the Walmart app to order stuff. Now these big stores, companies, not as much anymore, but they used to get hacked a lot and would lose customer data a lot. It doesn't happen anymore as much, but it did for a long time. Now, let's say Walmart gets hacked and you lose all your payment data and you weren't using Apple Pay to pay through that. Some people, not everyone, some people might look at Apple and think, hey, this is Apple's fault. I was using an iPhone when I paid So this is Apple's fault, even though it is not, because Apple allows this. So part of me thinks this is also something to save Apple's reputation, and because Apple's huge on privacy and security, and they're very much for it, and that's why they force you to use Apple Pay for everything, because they know it's secure and they can control it.
It's funny, use the same analogy that you had there versus what I had when we were talking about right to repair and how iPhones blow up and Apple takes a hit for it, because it is exactly the same.
He's got you there, Tim.
Use my same analogy, because Apple takes a PR hit, you know, because of that. And that is the exact same analogy to right to repair. I just want to point that out. We can move on, but I just want to point that out, that is my same assumption. So
I don't think Apple would get as big of a PR hit as you think they would, though, Tim. I think that if you're buying from Target or Walmart and they have a data breach, that's usually all over the news. Walmart's been hacked. Customer data has been breached. I don't think anybody would think that it's an Apple or a Google or a Samsung app store problem. I don't think you're completely wrong. There's going to be, you know, the onesies, twosies here that do believe that, and it will hurt Apple's reputation. I just don't think that it would be widespread enough to be a PR problem.
But what if also Apple loosened up of the apps that they allowed onto their app, onto their platform? For example, an app called Legit TV.
If you went and paid $1,000 for an app that did absolutely nothing that Apple let onto their app store, then absolutely you could, in my opinion, you could hold Apple accountable. Unless the app store description says, hey, this app does absolutely nothing. You are paying $1,000 for nothing. Like, unless they spelled it out for the customer that you are being stupid if you buy this.
Well, and Apple can 100%. I absolutely think that's what happened, and that's what was described in the app. I'd have to go back and look at the description.
I think you're right. I'm pretty sure that's what was described.
The people who did it got a refund because it was securely purchased through the App Store and had, you know, protections in there from developers. You have to develop an app that does something. How that app made it on the App Store, who knows? But that was
early days.
They go through a lot of process. They go through a lot of scrutiny for apps, and, you know, apps sometimes get approved and then they get pulled and yanked because we find out that they did something wrong. But I think, like Tim said, like, when you open up this platform to another system, like, you're creating the opportunity for fraud. You're creating the opportunity for theft. You're creating the opportunity to lose your data, and your data is secure. Tim does bring up
a good point that, like, if you use Target or Walmart or Uber or like Lyft or those places, those have their own payment processing systems where you're not going through Apple Secure Payment.
It's not an in-app purchase, but when you do an in-app purchase, like, you are secure, and, you know, you have the protection and the privacy, and you have the ability to get a refund if you deserve one. And, you know, again, it all comes down to what Apple dictates, but they also look at, you know, developers and what could this be wrong? You know, accidental purchases, that happens all the time where people do it. It doesn't mean that you can only do an accidental purchase once, you know, and then you're stuck on the hook for it the next time. So, and they send out reasons, you know, like how to protect your phone. So, you know, if your kids get on it, that they can't, you know, download apps, you know, and stuff like that. So I think if, like Matt said, if you open that up, you're opening it up to a lot of, you know, fraud, theft, and other, you know, malware issues that you could develop on an iPhone.
While we're on that topic, I really wish that Apple would make it so that if you develop an app, like Target, Walmart, where you're going to purchase something online and you know, enter your credit card information here, there needs to be an automatic Apple Pay button on that. Not all apps have it. All apps need it, because it is, in my opinion, so much more convenient and so much more secure. And I wish that Apple would be like, you can have your Visa credit card information, or you can do Apple Pay, and they need to give that option to the customers.
I agree with that, but like most places aren't gonna do that. I'm interested to hear from the one person who has been very quiet during this, and that's Joe. Do you have any comments or thoughts, Joe, on what we talked about?
I don't. This is all very interesting to think about. I hope that we don't go back to a world in which you have to pay for software updates. That was my main takeaway from all of this. I do not want to pay to upgrade my Windows if I have a Windows 10 machine, because that was super dope when I got to upgrade it for free. And
yeah, and think about it. This could be a monumental case where we change things across the board for software and developers. So I hope that developers know what they're getting into when they want to. I mean, nobody's really signed on to this, and I know that. Let me see if I can find where it was. But the judge said, well, Apple is not only being sued by Epic, it's also being sued by a class of developers, is what the judge said. It's not just Mr. Sweeney.
Yeah.
Like,
I don't know if that's the Coalition for App Fairness, but they're also being investigated in Europe for antitrust stuff, and yeah, the United States government, like Congress, investigated them recently. So, like, Epic picked a convenient and probably very targeted time to just throw more stress onto the Apple bonfire.
Yeah. So I mean, it'll absolutely be interesting to see what happens. The case closed with closing arguments today. When could we see a verdict? Maybe three weeks.
3 months.
She said she was hoping to see one in August, and she mentioned the exact date that Epic's license got pulled from the App Store, which was kind of funny. She said she was hoping to see it not verdict by like August 19th or whatever date it was.
That's like Thanos telling Loki no resurrections this time. That's fantastic.
So regardless to whatever we see, so let's say Apple loses, okay? No doubt about it that Apple is already working on appeals. They have a team of lawyers probably sitting in Apple Park right now, or at home, or wherever they're working right now. But they're probably working on avenues for an appeal. And an appeal will be filed immediately after if they lose. And this will, again, go on and go on and go on. And we're, again, just because the judge rules doesn't mean that Epic Games is going to come back to the, Fortnite's going to come back to the App Store. This could, again, lead on for longer periods of time. And, you know, I mean, who knows where this is going to go? You know, if the Justice Department tries to intervene and open up a antitrust investigation, which I don't think that, you know, it's an antitrust case, but I mean, that's just my thoughts, you know? And I guess we'll see where we go. I just don't want to go back to the old ways.
The one thing that I like about this trial is that even if, regardless of what happens, this is like excavated so much interesting internal operations of Apple, where you have like Tim Cook and Craig Federighi making statements about what they believe Apple is weak at. You have the judge asking really pointed questions about Apple's closed ecosystem business model and whether or not they're really taking care of people. I'm very curious to see who in the future that is targeting Apple today will use stuff from this case and all of the other cases that are going on right now at this time to in the future bring some kind of giant playbook of anti-Apple like courtroom cases and figure out something to take Apple down. Because it seems like people really want it to happen. Regardless of whether or not you like Apple or hate Apple, there are a lot of people that want to see Apple broken up or reduced in some way because they're taking in quite a bit of money.
Hey, Joe, are you able to pull up this link and share it on the screen that I just put in the Discord chat?
Yeah, give me a second.
So I want to point out, Craig is all about his hair. So if you've ever watched an Apple event, he's all about his hair, he's all about his personality. But it just, like, take the image that Getty Image got, you know, from this trial. And, like, this was just a I mean, just the way that he waved to the cameras and waved to the image, it's just amazing. Like, I really like that guy. This is the guy that opened the MacBook, Matt. You know, when he was down in the lab. So.
Yep. And that nice, what was it, like light pink glow that emitted into his face, and then he had that like look of glee, like, what's going to happen?
Yeah.
And then MPPHD, like, replicated it. It's like, oh, here we go.
Yeah, here we go. I mean, just look at that picture. Like, I mean, he's such a personality person when he does things like this. And when he did the pop open, and then he did the wave, you know, outside the trial. Like, I'm assuming this is outside the trial. But yeah, it just, yeah.
It looks just very personal.
Found it very, okay. Yeah. Anyways, any final thoughts? Any closing arguments for Apple or Epic?
Rip Epic. I can't see them getting back onto iOS. I mean, actually, you know, if after all of this, Apple is like so committed to being the, I don't know, arbiter of fairness in their app store, like for some reason they feel responsible for all of this in some way or something like that, and they take Epic Games back, they're like, hey, we're still willing to accept you as long as you take out that hotfix. I'm looking forward to that ending. I think that would be pretty fantastic.
Then that would be a...
I do have something important. I think we should take a moment of silence for all of the poor children who are no longer able to play Fortnite on mommy's cell phone. They're going through it right now.
All right, let's take a moment of silence right now. Okay, that's over with.
That's all they need.
If the judge rules in favor of Epic, I'm willing to bet she has a kid or grand. I don't know how old this judge is, kid or grandkid that plays Fortnite on an iPhone.
That would just not shut up about it.
I'm like, okay, fine. Epic wins. Will you leave me alone about it?
I mean, that's the contract, right? You give your kids the thing that they want, and then they quiet down in the house. That's what you
do. And then Apple files an appeal. Apple finds out about it and files an appeal that the judge ruled based on, you know, to satisfy her children or grandchildren.
Corporate espionage is real.
Anyways, it'll be interesting to see. And then what happens here? Do we go towards, does Epic take Google to court and do the same thing?
And then they take Sony, and then they get everything they want from Sony, and then they take Nintendo, and then they get everything they want from Nintendo, and then, I don't know, they probably leave Microsoft alone, because they seem to be buddies.
And Tim Sweeney runs for president.
Epic
takes over the world.
God help us know.
He tours the country on the battle bus.
Oh, no.
Where are we
His running people? Mate is a banana in a suit.
Here's the thing too. Here's the thing that I want to leave everybody with. If you learned anything about this trial, it's Epic is not fighting for developers. Epic is not fighting for the little people. We learned that throughout this trial when Tim Sweeney said if he was offered a special deal from Apple, he would have taken it. And that's what this is about for him. He wants a special deal. He wants it. So, anyways.
Alrighty. That's all I have.
In that case, we want to give a big thank you to everyone here for joining us live on this episode of the GooplyCast. And a big thanks to you if you're listening to our podcast. Look for our replays on YouTube and the podcast version of our episodes on all your favorite podcasting apps, including iHeartRadio. Follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook, so that way you'll get notified when we go live with this show. You can join in, and also for when we share new tech-related content. Stay tuned. It sounds like we're going to be talking about our... what was it, Roy? Next week?
iOS 15 wish list.
Next week is our iOS 15 wish list, because the week after that is WWDC.
Heck yeah. So please stay tuned for that. I've been your host, Matt Carter. For Matt, Roy, Tim, and Joe, thank you so much for watching and listening, and we'll catch you next time on the GooblyCast.
Thanks for listening to the GooblyCast. Don't forget to subscribe and rate our podcast. Visit us on social media at Gooply. And remember, you can stream the GooplyCast on your favorite podcasting app or Gooply.com.